Dan to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but I'm here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey everybody, welcome back to Let's Talk Wyoming. Happy Independence Day, everyone. I am excited to do this Independence Day special and have it drop on the 4th of July, which is very exciting. If you are listening to this after the 4th of July, I hope you had a wonderful holiday. It is my favorite by far holiday of the summer. Love, love, love Independence Day. But today, I wanted to push back on this modern myth when you hear whispered by cynics, sometimes shouted by people who think America is just a lucky roll of the dice, right? That we're some kind of historical accident, or worse, we're sort of a temporary empire teetering on borrowed time. I mean, you hear it in the rhetoric around elections, and I've talked about this, that this is the most important election of our lifetime, and that somehow the whole country is going to die if something doesn't happen, right? They think our country was built on rebellion, on emotion, on grievance. But what if I told you that they missed, I think, the entire point? America isn't a fluke. It's not the wild, unplanned child of 1776. It is the product of a long line of thought, from Jerusalem to Athens, from Rome to London, from London to Boston. Russell Kirk, in Roots of the American Order, reminds us that the American founding grew up out of ordered liberty, not anarchy. We are the heirs of men who took the best from thousands of years of civilization and crafted something meant to last, if we can keep it. And Russell Kirk's book, The Roots of the American Order, is probably by far one of my most favorite books that you can read if you're interested in conservatism, if you want to learn more, or if you consider yourself a conservative but want to feel more grounded in what that means, read Russell Kirk's Roots of the American Order. Mr. Edmonds gives that book to every governor every time we have a new governor elected in Wyoming. It is a marvelous book to read. So on this episode, since it's the 4th of July, we're going to dig into those roots. We'll talk about Russell Kirk, about Richard Weaver, about the first principles that have guided conservative thought, principles like moral order, custom, prudence, and the rejection of emotionalism. We're going to explore why John Adams, in a moment of great pressure, defended British soldiers against the rage of the mob because he believed in the rule of law over feelings. And I think a lesson we can stand to relearn right now in this moment in our history. So grab a cup of coffee, maybe a slice of apple pie or a hot dog or an adult beverage if it's that time of the day. And let's talk about the real roots of American order. So America didn't start in 1776. Yes, I know we all read about it in our history books, but it did not start there. One of the biggest mistakes that people make in thinking that America just sort of showed up one day fully formed, you know, like some sort of already birthed an adult baby. It's just not true. Russell Kirk knew better. In fact, he spent his life reminding us that America is not the child of chance. It's the heir of an ancient order. So in Roots of the American Order, Kirk tells us, quote, "If you would seek the origins of the American order of justice and freedom, you must seek them in Jerusalem and Athens and Rome and London." His point, America is a story that started long before Thomas Jefferson picked up his quill. It's a story built on four great cities, Jerusalem, Athens, Rome, and London. These aren't just stops on a tour. They're the cornerstones of the civilization we as Americans have inherited. So let's walk through them, okay? Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the moral order. From Jerusalem, we learn that there's a moral order to the universe. Law isn't just what the king says. Law is written by God, and no man is above it. Kirk puts it like this: the concept of a transcendent moral law, the law by which men truly live, arose from the Hebrew people. Without Jerusalem, freedom is just a free-for-all. It's emotion, it's license, it's mob rule. Jerusalem teaches us you're not in charge of the universe. There is a higher authority, and that authority puts limits on kings, on mobs, and on you. Then we go to Athens. Athens is about reason and the good life, right? From Athens, we inherit the love of wisdom and the discipline of reason. The Greeks asked, what is the good life? And they didn't settle for an easy answer. They believed that truth is knowable, that humans can use reason to build just societies. Kirk says, from the Greeks, Americans inherited the concept of an enduring moral order of the soul and of the republic. Athens teaches us not to be ruled by feelings, but to think, to govern with prudence, not passion, something we can use a little more, I think, these days. And then we go to Rome, the rule of law. From Rome, we inherit the concept of the republic and the rule of law. The Romans built a system where law outlived the rulers who made it. Writes, Rome bequeathed to us the principle of justice under law and the structure of the republic. From Rome, we learn that liberty isn't just freedom from something. It's the freedom to live under stable, predictable law. Rome teaches us that freedom without structure is just a stampede. And finally, we go to London, the common law, and the constitutional government. From London, we inherit constitutional government, trial by jury, the common law, the English Bill of Rights. This is where liberty became law in practice, not just in theory. It says, the English Constitution, the English Constitution, not written but deeply rooted in custom, is the direct ancestor of the American Constitution. London is where all the other lessons, Jerusalem's morality, Athens' reason, Rome's laws, finally take root in a government that balances freedom with responsibility. The framers didn't start from scratch. They stood on London's shoulders. Kirk's whole thesis is this: America didn't invent freedom. We inherited it. Our roots run deep, and if we forget them, we lose the very foundation that makes freedom possible. Without moral order, without law, without tradition, without reason, freedom unravels. As Kirk put it, and this is one of my most favorite quotes, y'all are going to get sick of hearing me use it, order is the first need of the soul and of society. And it's so incredibly true. And if you think about it, it's true in your life. It's true in the lives of people, men and women you may have known that lacked it, and you kept thinking they need help or they need something. What they needed was order. Order is the first need of the soul and of society. So America didn't start at 1776. And John Adams, in so many ways, proved that our revolution was not a revolution for revolution's sake, right? Because John Adams believed deeply as a lawyer in the rule of law. And I think it's important that we go there next, because if anyone understood the importance of order, it really was him. So picture Boston. We've all seen the movies, the shows, the series. Picture Boston, angry crowds, it's winter, it's freezing, British soldiers are on trial. And the easy political play would have been to join the mob. That would have been the easiest thing for John Adams. But he didn't flinch, right? He stood up for the rule of law, even when it meant defending men, every one of them of which could have hung. So let's go back there. March 5th, 1770, Boston. Tensions are through the roof. British soldiers are stationed in the city to enforce taxes and colonial laws. And the locals aren't exactly rolling out the welcome wagon, right? A crowd of colonists starts taunting a group of British soldiers, throwing snowballs, rocks, ice, clubs. And it's not just yelling. It's actually violent. In the middle of that chaos, shots ring out. Five colonists die. The streets run red. And the incident is quickly labeled, what else? The Boston Massacre. The colonial press lights up. Pamphlets fly off the presses. The mob demands blood. And then we go back to John Adams. Future president, founding father, revolutionary patriot. He does something that really is unthinkable. He agrees to defend the British soldiers in court. He stands between the soldiers and the mob and he says, no, we will not abandon justice because we are angry. Think about that. We will not abandon justice because we are angry. That's something we need in our time right now. We need to return to that idea. Adams didn't make excuses for British policies. He wasn't defending the empire. He wasn't defending, he wasn't defending the acts that he knew others and himself were deeply angry about. And he wasn't living in this moment that we often see now where it was guilt by association. He wasn't drummed out of Boston because he defended these soldiers. And I think that's a really good point we mustn't miss. He was defending the rule of law, and people saw that eventually for the good that it was, because Adam believed deeply that facts matter, right? He famously said, facts are stubborn things, right? And whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence. This is so true. That's not just a courtroom flourish. This is a first principle. It's a clear rejection of emotionalism. It's a declaration that truth does not answer to feelings, that even in the heat of conflict, even when everyone is screaming at you to pick a side, you have to choose justice over passion. So here's what Adams told that jury that day. And I'm going to read some of this because I just think it's so beautiful. We have been told that our ancestors, that our rights, that our liberties, and that our religion are in danger. But facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passion, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence. He argued that soldiers fired in self-defense, and guess what? The jury agreed. Most of the soldiers were acquitted. Adams knew his defense would cost him politically. He knew he'd be hated for it for a time, but he did it anyway because he believed that order, reason, and law are more sacred than a short-term political win. And he didn't stay hated for long, which I think, again, is an important fact. Now, look, I'm not saying that the mob in Boston didn't have legitimate grievances. They absolutely did. But Adams showed us that even in the middle of that kind of righteous anger, we don't get to throw out the rules. Order comes first. Without order, freedom isn't free. It's just mob rule wearing a hat, and we are all going to be victims of that mob rule. Even if you're wearing the right hat, at the moment the first mob happens. This is what Russell Kirk is talking about. This is what conservative thinkers like Richard Weaver warned us about, that when we let this kind of emotionalism take the wheel, we lose the ability to govern ourselves. We swap principles for for emotional passion. And when that happens, history tells us what comes next, which is usually collapse. So we need this kind of courage today, which is why I'm talking about this again, because we need the kind of courage that says no to the mob mentality, to the guilt by association, to not looking at facts, to emotional outrage cycles. We need to instead say yes to facts, to the law, to order, even when it's hard, even when we stand alone. And I've said this so many times, have courage, have courage. Adams didn't just believe in freedom. He believed in the structures that made freedom possible. And that's a hill worth defending, I think. So where do we go from here? What are the ideas, the first principles that guided men like Adams and formed the backbone of conservative thought? Well, let's talk about Russell Kirk's 10 principles and Richard Weaver's warnings and what it really means to build a society that can last. So, because if we don't understand those roots, we'll never keep our tree alive. So the idea that really held it all together is, first of all, I think we ask ourselves, what exactly are we holding on to? What are these ideas that make society like ours possible? We hear lots of people, and I've said it before, talk about first principles, but a lot of times you don't quite understand that. And I've had people, email me, call me, say, I don't understand, what is the first principles? Because here, and I think it's important that I maybe be more clear, because if we can't name them, we can't defend them, right? So Russell Kirk, in his wisdom, gave us kind of a blueprint. He called them the 10 principles of conservatism, not because he was interested in writing some kind of rule book. And I think I've said in the past that, conservatism is not some kind of dogma, because it isn't. Some people will try to say that it's a dogma and you have to believe this or that, or this is what you have to think. And that's usually just about trying to control people. But what he's doing in his rule book is describing permanent things of which nobody owns, that it's just the bedrock of a free and ordered society. So let's walk through them so you guys can have them. So again, if you can't name them, you can't remember them and defend them. Number one, moral order is real. Kirk said a society in which men and women are governed by belief in an enduring moral order is a good society, because it's something we all know. We've known since we were children, there is right and there is wrong. These aren't negotiable. They don't change based on your mood or your latest hashtag. I think I've mentioned this before, but I always think about this study I read about that was just so interesting with little babes. I think they were like 18 months to 2 years old. And they did a study where they showed the children like a sock puppet play. And in the sock puppet play, one sock puppet is mean and the other one is not. And at the end, the children clearly had preference for the nice sock puppet. And they just immediately knew that this sock puppet was, puppet was doing right and the other one was doing wrong. We know it, right? We know there are right and wrong. We absolutely do. So moral order is real. Number two, custom, convention, and continuity matter. Tradition is not an enemy. It's the wisdom of the dead. It's an acquired knowledge. And I think anytime we toss out custom, it's really tossing out for us a compass. It's one of the reasons that I'm such a passionate reader of history, because history is, of course, in many ways, reading about tradition. So custom, convention, and continuity really matter. And then number three is the prescriptive rights. Our rights don't come from government. They come from God, from nature, from history. They're inherited. They're not handed out like coupons from politicians. So when we talk about, you know, and now we live in this time where even on the right, we have people that seem to want to talk more about what they think they have, that what they think is owed to them. I have a right, right? I have a right. This is my right, right. The government isn't going to give you any rights that you don't already have. You have them because you gave them, you were born with them. These are God-given rights that you were given. What you have is a responsibility. What you have is you owe a debt to the country, and you have a responsibility to act in certain ways. So prescriptive rights, they come from God. Number four, prudence. Big changes should be made carefully, not in a fit of passion. Kirk said prudence is the first political virtue because it asks, what will actually happen if we do this? What makes us feel good right now, right? That's not how you answer it. What you ask is, what will actually happen if we do this, not what makes us feel good right now? And a lot of people think about political victories in terms of that second one. I'm going to feel so good. I'm going to feel so good. I'm going to win over that so-and-so who I really don't like, who's always said no, and who's so difficult, right? What we should be asking and what we should have is prudence. What will actually happen if we do this? So prudence, number four. Society. Healthy society is full of different people doing different things. You know, forced sameness is a road to tyranny, because uniformity is not unity. It's just another form of control. This is why I've talked a lot about factionalism in our politics, this idea that everybody has to be the same way, think the same way, don't ask questions, you know, uniformity. That isn't unity. And variety makes for a healthy society. I think everyone should pretty much understand that. Number six, this is a big one, and it's a really important one, and it gets missed by a lot of people. Imperfection. Man is flawed. Man has always been flawed, always will be. And Kirk reminds us that we can't build a utopia. Attempts to create one usually end with somebody getting crushed. The goal is ordered liberty, not perfection, right? And a lot of people think that they can achieve or create perfection here on Earth, that somehow they're going to get that utopia, and it never works, because man is deeply flawed. Number seven, freedom and property are linked. You cannot separate private property rights from personal freedom. And Kirk was very blunt, where property is insecure, freedom is insecure. So if the government can take your stuff, your freedom is on borrowed time, right? So your property, your abode, the place you live, whether you own it or you rent it, that's your little postage stamp of freedom, and it's yours. Freedom and property are forever linked, which is why any erosion of private property rights is dangerous, dumb, and bad. Number eight, voluntary community. So conservatives favor small, and we favor that kind of local association over giant centralized power. Obviously, you build community through church, through family, through civic groups. You don't wait around for, you know, your state or your nation to tell you. We really believe in that voluntary community, and it has to be voluntary, right? Everybody, anyone who's forced into some sense of community, or you have to agree with these things, it's not real community. And we see this in some social issues where people want to force you into, you have to believe this or you have to think this. It can't be. We favor small local associations. And then number nine, a restraint on power and passion. Of course, this is, I think, obvious. There's got to be limits, right? In particular, in this order, we have to have limits on government, which is a big deal. So small government, less government, government closest to the people. We have to have limits on emotion, which means we have to have limits on ourselves. So unlimited power and unchecked passion lead to ruin, which is obvious. We've all seen it. We've probably seen someone we know or someone we've heard up go through it because they were not able to control their own passions. Order isn't the enemy of liberty. It's what holds liberty together, right? Liberty is not this free-for-all thing. And then finally, the number 10, permanence and change. Conservatives know that change is a part of life. We are not opposed to change, as we've often been accused of, but it should be built on what works, not burn everything down for the sake of progress. Kirk said the conservative knows he must work with human nature, not against it. So these aren't talking points. These are really kind of survival tools that Kirk came up with. It's a really good understanding of these first principles, because they're guardrails that keep us from driving our civilization off the road and into a ditch. And Russell Kirk wasn't the only one, you know, waving the warning flags. Other conservative thinkers, many of which have emulated so much of this. Richard Weaver, another giant of conservative thought, made his famous declaration, "Ideas have consequences," quoted from his book a time or two. Weaver saw what happens when people start playing fast and loose with truth. He believed that the root of the root problem of the modern world is kind of this denial of objective truth that we try to delude ourselves, and we're doing it to this day. Because if there's no truth, no first principles, no moral order, what's left? I'll tell you what's left. Power. Naked power is left. The loudest voice wins. The biggest mob wins. And that, my friend, is not freedom. The people who want to unshackle everyone from truth, the people that want to deny objective truth, that want to deny first principles or deny a moral order, may think that they're doing it for the civil rights moment of their time or something really wonderful, and it makes them feel good. Remember that, you know, not what will happen, but, oh, I'll feel so good about this. I'll feel so good about this. What they're going to get is not freedom. So Weaver wrote that we've descended into what he calls sort of the spoiled child psychology. I love this. It's a really worth reading, where people chase instant gratification. They reject all forms of discipline and restraint. And it's really familiar, right? Because we're living in a world that he warned us about in many ways. If we want to reclaim anything, order, community, responsibility, we have to start with the ideas, the first principles, the roots. So because when you cut the roots, you don't get liberty, you get collapse. And so it's why it's just so important to go back to those roots. And that's why I wanted to talk about it today on Independence Day, this important, wonderful, beautiful holiday where we celebrate this republic and how lucky we are to live here in this country and in this beautiful state, the Cowboy State. So there's a danger of us losing our roots. And when we forget, we fall, right? So if you're listening and you're thinking, you know, where's she going? Here's what I'll say. I think we have to spend a lot of time thinking about the roots of the American order, because it grounds our country in something that wasn't just luck, right? Roots don't do you any good if you cut them off. And by forgetting or never really understanding that America wasn't just a lucky thing, that it's grounded in these deep roots, then we can preserve those roots. So, but in many ways, we haven't. We've lost them. We've traded our roots for something, I think, a lot cheaper. That we've replaced these first principles with sort of first reactions. There's so much emotionalism in our politics right now. And it really doesn't matter if you're on the right or the left, right? Everyone is hooked on outrage. We are addicted to whatever gets the biggest reaction in the moment. Reason, not so much. Prudence, what? I mean, do you even see prudence anymore? The idea of a moral order, man, that's hard to find, because those things just don't trend, right? And don't get me started on mob politics, because it's just bad. We've built a culture where people think if they yell loud enough, if they hashtag, right, we have riots, we have people who go out and think and actually push back on the idea that you shouldn't beat up cops and that you should just, you know, if you want to protest, that's absolutely within your right. And we should be able to protest. Of course, it's an important principle of the country to keep government power in check, which is one of those principles, right? But they want to call even the most violent of behaviors justice, because they feel like it's a win, right? It feels good. We're going to show those colonizers. We're going to show those bad guys. And it doesn't matter what the facts say. It doesn't matter any of that. This is bad. We live in this culture, in this time, when these things are just like powder cakes all the time. But Russell Kirk warns us, right? He says, a people without memory is a people without liberty. And right now we're acting like we have amnesia, right? We've forgotten the long, hard road that got us here. We've forgotten that liberty isn't a birthright. It's a legacy. And legacies can be lost. When we abandon first principles, we don't just lose the past, we lose the map, we lose the compass. And that's dangerous, because then we're going to lose the country. So we cannot lose these things. We see it in how we treat education, not as a place to teach the next generation how to think, but a place to tell them how to feel, and a place that we can control, right? A system, we're going to control a system. We see it in how we treat history, not as something to study, but something to cancel. We have all that cancel culture. We see it in how we talk about our rights, like they fell out of the sky or something. There's no connection to duty. There's no connection to responsibility, no connection to this moral order that really is the thing that gives them meaning. And we're seeing the cracks form because of it. We're seeing what happens when this emotionalism replaces prudence, when mobs replace juries, when feelings replace facts. The founders warned us about this. And Russell Kirk, Richard Weaver, all of the conservative giants, they all warned us about this. And here we are learning the hard way. But here's the good news. It's not too late. Roots don't disappear overnight, okay? Memory can be restored. Order can be rebuilt, but only if we're willing to do the hard work of remembering and standing up for it. And I think that's I mean, I think that's the most important thing. As Kirk said, the recovery of order is the recovery of memory. It starts with knowing who we are and where we came from, because a nation that forgets its story doesn't get a sequel. And I think that's really, really important. So I would highly, highly recommend that you read The Roots of American Order. It is an amazing book. It's worth reading to understand these cities: Jerusalem, the moral order; Athens, reason, the good life; Rome, the rule of law; London, the common law and constitutional government. These things are what we inherited. It wasn't just the luck of a draw. It wasn't the luck of just a small group of guys. It was inherited through a long, long process of taking the good, the thought, the civilization, the things that worked. So what does all this mean? Why spend this 4th of July talking about order and first principles and books and the stubbornness of John Adams? And it's not just because I'm an absolute nerd and I love this stuff. It's because America wasn't built by people, you know, chasing feelings and emotionalism. It was built by people who really believed in these permanent things. And it was built on something higher. And we like to tell ourselves that freedom just happens, that it's our default setting. And I think Americans especially are very arrogant in this. But it isn't. Freedom has to be built. It has to be ordered. It has to be defended. Ronald Reagan said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for those to do the same. That's not a slogan. It's kind of like it's our American job description. That's our job as Americans. And when you cut away the noise of politics right now, you'll find that same question. Do we love this country enough to protect the roots? Are we willing to say no to the mob when it's easier to nod along? And I know that's hard right now. Are we willing to remember that order isn't the enemy of freedom? It's the foundation of it. Are we willing to understand those things and to defend them? Like I said, have courage. Right now, we live in a time when people ridicule when we go to meetings, maybe a party meeting or a open meeting of county commissioner or a board, and you see people acting a fool, just acting a fool. Don't join them. Do not join them. Stand up and tell people to calm down. Here's the thing. The Declaration of Independence begins with the words, when in the course of human events. That's not historical, not just historical framing. That's a reminder that history didn't accidentally drop into our laps. It came from somewhere. It's part of a course, a story, a study. We are either continuing or we're abandoning. When in the course of human events. Every day at the end of it is a little moment of history that someone else is going to look back on. Russell Kirk said, the best things are passed down to us. They are not contrived by us. Conservatives believe that to our core. The best things are passed down to us. They are not contrived by us. We stand here today, not as creators of liberty, but as stewards of liberty, because what we've inherited is very, very rare. What we stand for, what we stand to lose is really irreplaceable. It is so rare. And I think when you have some time to study, travel and study abroad, you really understand that more so than I think Americans that don't have that opportunity to leave, because what we have inherited is incredibly rare. So I just want to say before I end this, as the fireworks light up tonight and I'll be hunkered down with the Edmonds pack, who do not approve of fireworks, by the way, but as the fireworks light up the sky, I hope we all take a moment to remember those roots, that we remember John Adams standing against the mob. We remember that long tradition from Jerusalem, Athens, Rome, and London that really made America possible. And we remember words. There's so many great ones. And I looked up so many and I was going to read a bunch of them, but then I think too much is just too much, right? Here's one. Theodore Roosevelt said, Americanism is a question of spirit, conviction, and purpose. I think that's so important. Daniel Webster said, God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it. So let's love it, right? Let's guard it. Let's love and defend that liberty. Let's be the people who remember that freedom is a tree with deep roots and it's worth defending. So go out and buy the book, Roots of the American Order by Russell Kirk, and read it. I think you'll learn and grow from understanding a little bit more about where America came from and that she wasn't some great lucky moment or some accident. Okay, guys, happy Independence Day, Wyoming. Let's keep the Republic. That's what I say. I'll see you next time.